morning again. Last week, we talked about the Trinity and all the ways in which the Bible and all the ways in which knowledge of God matter. We are made in the image of God, and therefore to know God is not only to be in relationship with him, it is also to know ourselves. We cannot know ourselves apart from knowing God. After all, God himself is a Trinity and therefore is fundamentally relational. As a result, our relationships with each other are supposed to reflect the life of God himself. Therefore, we have to learn how to make good relationships, even though modern life makes this difficult in a lot of ways. For example, we have to learn how to make space for other people by giving them space to talk and how to have a conversation. We need to learn patience and how to work together as a group. And importantly, we need to learn how to listen and to listen well. Phones, texting, and constant screen times means that a lot of people, children and adult alike, do not know how to be social or how to be respectful. These skills aren't learned automatically. They are taught over time and across generations. And last week, we touched on the creativity of God and what it means for us to be made in the image of that creator. That is, we are made to be creators in a manner similar to God himself. We can see this when we look at how the rest of the biblical narrative plays out. Adam and Eve are made to be gardeners, and Cain is a farmer while Abel is a shepherd. Later on, Cain will build the first city in Genesis 4, and when God is building his tabernacle in Exodus, he empowers the craftsmen Bezalel and Oholiab with the Holy Spirit in order to grant them the ability to make the tabernacle and to make it supernaturally well. While it's not common for God to give the Spirit to craftsmen, the fact that God does it points to his overall purpose for creation. God cares that we are able to shape the world around us, because doing so is what God himself does. It is our God-given duty to take the world and to make it better, because God made the world good and not perfect. Of course, knowing how to improve the world requires wisdom, and wisdom comes only from knowing God and from being in relationship with God. But work is not the only thing that we're made for. Work is a part of God's good world, but it is not the sum total of it. That is why God gave us a Sabbath, a day of rest. After all, we are made in the image of God, and therefore we must rest as God himself rests. That is why, as we read in Exodus, resting one day a week is one of the Ten Commandments. Furthermore, as you'll notice, Exodus ties Sabbath directly to the destiny of creation itself. As it is written, "In 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy." For the Sabbath to be holy means that it is set apart, because that is the foundational definition of holiness. For God to be holy means that he is distinct from everything else. For us to be holy means that we're supposed to be distinct from the people who don't believe. For the Sabbath to be holy, then, means that this day is not supposed to be like every other day. Just as a historical side note, the Sabbath used to be Saturday. After all, the seventh day in the calendar is Saturday. Christians moved the Sabbath to Sunday because of the resurrection, which took place on a Sunday. We gather to celebrate the Sabbath on Sunday to commemorate the resurrection of Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath. I don't think I can overemphasize how important the Sabbath is to God and how important rest is to God, because it is important enough that God grants all creation itself the time and the space to rest. As it later tells us in the book of Exodus, "You may plant your land for 6 years and gather its crops, but during the seventh year, you must leave it alone and withdraw from it. The needy among you will then be able to eat just as you do, and whatever is left over can be eaten by wild animals." And in Leviticus 25, it is revealed that the cycle of Sabbaths every 7 years is part of an even larger cycle of Sabbaths every 50 years, where the Israelites are to count off seven Sabbath years, seven times 7 years, so that the seven Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the seventh month, on the Day of Atonement. Sound the trumpet throughout the land. Consecrate the 50th year, that is, set it apart, make it holy, and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. For it is a jubilee, and it is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. Now, the way the promise of land is transformed from the Old Testament to the New Testament is a fairly long conversation that we don't have time for right now. And to my knowledge, none of us are farmers, and we can't practice this directly. But while I don't think we need to observe Sabbath years anymore, I think it should be clear how much God cares about rest, both for us and for creation itself. The whole of the world is good, as the creation stories tells us. It is not something for us to exploit. It is not something for us to destroy for our own happiness. God loves the whole world, and therefore creation itself rests, and just as we are to rest. Of course, these two things are ultimately related. When we work, we often work to transform and extract resources from the world, whether directly or indirectly. When we rest, creation itself gets to take a day off. God may love us more than the sparrow, as Jesus says in Matthew, but he still loves the sparrow. All of this is to say that rest is inherent to God's good world. Rest is not optional. Rest is not laziness. Work is good, but rest is just as good. Insofar as the seventh day of creation is its climax, so too is the Sabbath the pinnacle of God's world. When the Bible talks about rest, when the Bible talks about Sabbath, it means more than simply taking a break because we're tired. For us to cease from our labor is itself an act of worship, because it is a means by which we acknowledge that we are not ultimately in control of the world. In the same way that working with our creativity reflects who God is as creator, so too does resting reflect who God is as the ruler of his creation. That is why in Leviticus it is written, "You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord." The Sabbath is to time what the temple is to space. To keep the Sabbath holy is the same as respecting the temple of God, because they both represent the same thing: God's ongoing control over and sustaining of the world. In contrast to the modern world, where we are so often encouraged to hustle and grind and work and study, God invites us to rest, because we can trust that God will take care of us, even when we do not work 24/7. For simplicity, a biblical definition of rest is to cease doing any sort of economic or academic activity, and to put that time instead towards the fostering of relationship. To rest is to enjoy the good world that God has made. To rest is to confess that we do not have full control over our lives, but instead that we are in relationship with the God who does ultimately sustain us, and who does ultimately sustain the entirety of the world. After all, as anyone who has ever farmed or gardened can tell you, there is a point at which doing more is a futile endeavor. You can't just dump fertilizer on plants and expect them to grow. You can't just keep adding water in the hope that they'll grow faster. If you do, if you try, you'll end up killing all the plants. Oftentimes, you just have to wait. You just have to trust that God will cause the plants to grow. There is no rushing the process. So too is it, I would argue, with most of life. A very few things can be improved through sheer effort, but most things cannot. Most things take time, whether we like it or not. Most things are beyond our control, whether we like it or not. Therefore, God invites us to rest, secure in the knowledge that the world is ultimately in his hands. It may strike you as strange to read that God builds rest into the fabric of creation itself. But here, it is helpful to compare Genesis against similar creation stories from the ancient world. For example, in the time before Abraham, it was commonly understood that the pagan gods created humanity basically to be the slaves of the gods. In Mesopotamian, Sumerian, and Egyptian cultures, humans are created to do the work that the gods are too tired or too lazy to do. That is why sacrifices are necessary in the ancient religions. The gods want food and wine, but they don't want to make it themselves. Therefore, the ancient gods make humans. But when Yahweh makes the world, he does not demand sacrifice. In fact, God does not display himself as needing anything at all. Instead, he makes humans to care for creation and to care for each other, rather than providing for the needs of God. Where the other gods treated humanity as slaves, Jesus treats us as friends, inviting us to be part of his image. We are made because it is good for creation to exist, and because it is good for us to rest and to work in the world. Therefore, rest matters because it says a lot about who we are. We are not mere slave laborers. Our worth is in more than our capacity to produce. Our worth is more than our economic value. And I think for us in the modern day, rest is particularly important because the goodness of work is often twisted in the busyness and sinfulness of modern life. In Vancouver, where I'm from, busyness has become something like a status symbol. People want to look busy. People like having plans and filling their calendars, both for themselves and for their children. And it is often filled with nominally good things. Piano lessons, church programs, tutoring, and sports, and all manner of good thing. If you take a look at all of these things individually, they are all good ways of participating in God's world. It is good to be able to make music. It is good to learn and to study God's creation, and therefore to know more about God himself. And it is good to physically engage our bodies, which are a gift from God. But sin so often takes what is good and twists them into something else. In fact, I would argue that these are the most insidious sins. In general, no one goes around telling us to shoot orphans and puppies. Instead, the temptation of the devil often hides behind holy-sounding words. I think we are generally more in danger of working too much rather than too little. There's even a sociological term for it, the Protestant work ethic. Now, I understand why people choose to work as much as they do. The news is full of articles about how bad housing prices are and how bad inflation is. It often seems like there's no choice but to work if you want to keep up with the Joneses. And I know that this is why so many immigrant families came to Canada in the first place, to have a better economic outcome for their children. But I have also known so many stories of parents basically abandoning their children to go work, and I have seen the damage that can have across generations. And we are all aware of this generation of iPad kids whose parents have basically abandoned them to the algorithm. I don't know if you've ever seen a TikTok, but the sheer volume of decontextualized misinformation is quite frankly horrifying. And at a societal level, the fact that kids interact more with other children than with adults means that the primary shaping force of so many children in our society is other children. I don't know how much you remember of your childhood, but in mine, I did not exactly learn how to be wise from my friends. On the side of the children themselves, it seems to me that children live increasingly scheduled lives. Between school and lessons and all sorts of extracurricular activities, including church programs, there seems to be less and less time to rest. And all of these things are theoretically good. But I have also noticed that the lack of meaningful rest for children has seemed to lead to an increasing mental health burden on a lot of young people. When I was doing my master's, one of my friends basically paid for her schooling by doing college prep for third graders. As ridiculous as that sounds, there is an increasing sense that any failure of any sort is unacceptable. And this contributes, in a large part, I think, to the wave after wave of mental health issues among young people. It often seems to me that parenthood is like an arms race, where parents are competing to buy their children as many life-enriching experiences as possible. I would never tell you that you have to lower your standard of living. I will never go into your budget and do your budgeting for you. I will never tell you that school is not important. I've been in school for a long time and it was great. I will just point out to you that a lot of the Western world, and indeed a lot of the Western church, is making the choice to prioritize economic wealth and academic growth over relational health. Rest, in the sense that the Bible means it, is costly. In the ancient world, working that one extra day can mean the difference between bringing the crop in or having it destroyed by hail. In the modern world, working that extra day can mean a raise or a promotion. In school, studying that extra day might mean the difference between a pass and a fail. Working less and studying less means that we are surrendering economic and academic opportunity to those who are willing to sacrifice more. Of course, I do understand that someone has to put food on the table, and that we as a global church should really be better at supporting those on the economic margins. But for everyone for whom survival is not the immediate concern, we really ought to weigh the consequences of our choices. After all, we pay the price for our lack of rest in a myriad of other ways. How we spend our time is always a trade-off. The more time we spend pursuing a standard of wealth, whatever that standard happens to be, the less time we will have for anything else. The more time we spend getting good grades or a good pay, the less time we will have to learn how to be wise. If we do not set apart intentional time, relationships will deteriorate. If we do not set aside intentional time for God, that relationship will deteriorate too. So God commands us to rest, because rest makes space for both God and for other people. Of course, like most good things, this is easier said than done. And I know that we as a North American church have often not been great at this. We tend to fill available time, and churches are often talked about in terms of the programs they provide. While we might say that rest matters, while we might acknowledge this with our mouths, little by little, our actions deny their truth. A lot of Christian culture has become the face of middle-class morality rather than any truly revolutionary movement. In a more ideal world, Sunday services are meant to get everybody on the same page and to draw everyone closer to God so that we can collectively find ways to rest and therefore to worship God together. Church is and was never supposed to be a burden, and if it ever is, I hope you'll come talk to me about it. Church should not be a part of the hustle culture which so characterizes the rest of the world. Closer to home, it turns out that the church's attempt to just do more or to just try harder have historically failed to pass the faith across generations. The problem with modern evangelism is not so much that people don't want to talk about Jesus or that people don't want to come to church anymore. Cold calling people about Jesus has always been an inefficient strategy. How many of the thousands of people to whom Jesus preached actually listened to him and followed after? By the New Testament's count, it was about 72. We should absolutely tell people about Jesus, and we should absolutely spread the gospel, and we should absolutely invite people to church. But we should not pretend that this has always been a high-yield strategy. I suspect a bigger portion of our problem lies in the fact that we are trying to do more when we should be trying to do less. Rest in our culture is a radical statement. And I've been to a lot of churches in my life, but the ones where I felt the most welcome, the ones I was most interested in staying at, were not the ones with the slickest service or the most up-to-date programs. They were simply the ones that had room for me. And I do not mean that they had a physical chair for me to sit in. It was the ones where people made time and space in their lives to get to know me and open up their lives for the same. One of the things that keeps me Christian is knowing people with a depth of faith and not simply meeting people who are middle class nice. Churches which use Sunday service or church programs as the primary appeal mechanism basically only appeal to Christians who already value those services. Churches which have the space to invite strangers into the life and rest of God have something truly radical to offer a busy and lonely world. And at the level of youth, the statistics from places like the Fuller Youth Institute are pretty clear. The effectiveness of youth programs is quite minimal, and no amount of work will make them more effective. The young people who stay Christian by the time they are out of university are almost universally the ones whose parents had the strongest faith and whose parents had strong relationships to other Christians. Youth groups and other programs are only useful because they enable those relationships to exist. But what ultimately matters is those relationships. People become and stay Christian when they see the depth of the faith of those around them, insofar as that depth actually exists. Depth takes relationship, and relationships take time, time which we so often carve out for other things. What I think we need then is rest, just as God himself commands us to rest. We need to make time and space to embrace the world that God has for us. After all, we are not ultimately in control of our future, and no amount of work will put us in control of our future. We cannot predict where Christianity is going, no more than we can predict where CLBC is going. But I do know that we are at a point in history where trying and retrying the old paths, where just putting in more sheer effort is unlikely to work. Moreover, it's unlikely to be sustainable. God has never demanded that we burn ourselves out in his name. Quite the opposite, in fact. God invites us to rest, because it is rest which creates the time and the space for new work to occur. Rest allows for the renewing of relationship to God and to each other, and it is through these relationships that we are invited into the life of God himself. Amen.